Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is John Austin, who is a medical doctor, professor emeritus of radiology at the Columbia School of Medicine, and also he's the director of thoracic imaging at Columbia Presbyterian Hospital.
It used to be that, now it's Columbia University Medical Center for PR reasons. They changed the name.
Oh, okay. Columbia University Medical Center in Manhattan. Dr. Austin has been working in the field of thoracic imaging for, I think, almost 20 years. He's semi-retired now.
I'll correct that, 40 years.
40 years, okay. And he's semi-retired. And a number of years ago, he and an Alexander Technique teacher, Pearl Ossabell, who is now deceased, a wonderful Alexander teacher in New York City, co-wrote a study that involved respiratory muscular function and the Alexander technique. And we're going to talk today about that study. Dr. Austin, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be on the show.
Great. And I wonder if you could begin by describing the study and its results and the implications of that study.
I'm happy to do that. The study was published in 1992 in the medical journal Chest, which is mainly intended for respiratory physicians or pulmonologists, as they're called in the trade. And it really is a study of breathing and the Alexander technique, in which we entered with the hypothesis that aspects of breathing would be helped. But we weren't sure exactly what aspects of breathing would be helped. We just had the idea that that would happen. And what we actually did was a little pilot study with 8 volunteers, in which they had a series of 20 lessons. We made the educated guess that turned out to be right, the educated guess that 20 lessons would produce some improvements in respiratory function. There's nothing magical about 20 lessons, but as we all know, the Alexander technique is educational, and 20 lessons we thought would be a good start. And in those 8 subjects, we did show some significant changes. So we then went ahead and did a controlled study, in which we took a total of 20 healthy adult volunteers, and had 10 of those subjects as controls, and they had nothing. And 10 of the subjects had weekly lessons, and before and after the 20-week interval of the one lesson a week, then we did standard testing of breathing. So I should say a word about what those tests involve. Mm-hmm. Some of the listeners may have done it themselves. Basically, you hitch a tube up to the mouth, you cover the nose so there isn't any leak of air out the nose, and you have people breathe in and out, and you do various maneuvers. So from quiet breathing, then you have a person take as deep a breath as they possibly can, then you have them blow it out as far as they possibly can, and that gives you the maximum quantity of air that a person can move in and out of their lungs. Another standard test is how fast you can breathe it out, and the standard way that's done is to, after 1 second, you see what percentage of the total quantity of air the person is able to get out. That's a standard test in asthma or in smokers with bronchitis or pulmonary emphysema. And that test, I might add, did not show significant change in our population of healthy people. And then there's a very nice test in which you have the person just breathe in and out as fast and furiously. They can't see how much air they can get in and out. And that's done over 15 seconds. It's a real muscular test. And then we also measured what the respiratory physiologists call peak flow, the fastest you can breathe air in, the fastest you can breathe air out, and and we'll discuss those results in a little bit. And then there's another thing that's a little like a little piece of tubing. It's like a trumpet mouthpiece with a teeny little side vent that can measure pressure. So you can actually measure the maximum pressure that a person can generate by breathing in and the maximum pressure they can measure breathing out, and those we did show significant changes in. So to review the results, we did not show change, and I was hoping that we would actually show that Alexander lessons would enlarge the total quantity of air in lungs, and it did just by a little bit, about 120 milliliters in the subjects of our study, the 10 VBAT lessons, but it wasn't statistically significant. And it approached statistical significance, but it wasn't there. And how much you could breathe out in 1 second, very standard test, that didn't show any change. But what did show change was the test of maximum, how much you can breathe in and out. Now, you can think, when you breathe in and out as hard as you possibly can, that if your chest cage, your ribs and muscles are all tight, you're not going to do it so well. So, and we showed a 6% positive change, 6% increase, and that was very nicely statistically significant. We also showed an interesting thing that when you breathe out as hard as you possibly can, that the peak expiratory flow was called, so that just the fastest quantity you could breathe out, that significantly increased. And while we showed a 14% change coming in for maximum amount you could breathe in, even though that was a bigger number than the 9% increase in expiratory flow, that wasn't statistically significant. And we'll discuss that in a minute too. And then the trumpet mouthpiece test for how much pressure you can generate at the mouth, breathing in as hard as you can, out as hard as you can. Those very nicely changed. Those were around 10%, approximately, positive changes. So those are very nice results. So from this, where do we go? What does this all mean? And this is all speculative, but it all makes sense. It's all discussed in the paper. Our first thought is that, you know, Alexander Technique lessons are absolutely wonderful for improving posture. As I'm talking here to you on the telephone, I'm imagining I'm having an Alexander lesson. I'm sitting up very, very nicely. Alexander is wonderful for making you do that. So then the first thing that occurred to us was increased length of muscles of the entire torso. That is, because the Alexander Technique strongly encourages the voluntary inhibition of the slouching and slumping that's really easy for us to do all the time, it actually lengthens these muscles, and longer muscles work better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very well established. That's you know, whether you're, you know, throwing a baseball or breathing, longer muscles are just can generate more strength. That's a purely mechanical thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then another aspect of this that is a nice speculation is the abdomen. The abdomen has muscles all around it, front and back. And what we wondered there, if you sit up very nicely, you can get increased length of the muscles in the front of the abdomen. But what also I think happens, we're speculating on this with Alexander lessons, is that because the abdomen become, the muscles of the abdomen become, they become unlazy. You use them rather than just slouching where you're letting all those muscles relax.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're using them, then you're going to have increased strength. So and this is both the muscles, you can think of the sides and the front of the abdomen, but also the muscles of the low back, which, and I have suspicion that the reason my own low back pain totally went away after for me, it was, goodness, about 8 months of Alexander lessons, is that those muscles gain in length and strength also just in daily use. It's strength and the tone of the muscles. And my guess is that's why in this study we showed more improvements in breathing out than in breathing in. So, you just use those belly muscles really nicely when you're trying to breathe out as hard as you can. There's also something else that's interesting about muscle, which is muscle has what's called resting tension. It isn't just like nothing's going on in the muscle at all. All muscles have a little something going on. And it's certainly a standard observation. My Alexander teachers, that some people come in with really tight muscles in the chest. The teacher can feel them, whether it's the intercostal muscles that are between the ribs, you know, the muscles you eat when you eat ribs, so to speak. And if those teachers have observed that those muscles become less tight, and that certainly is a standard observation, then that means the resting tensions of those muscles are reduced. And that means that when the muscle goes into hard use, like breathing out hard or breathing in hard, that you'll get increased function from those muscles. One way that people think about this in the respiratory physiology business is that you can think of it as a corset. If you have really tight muscles of the chest, like a corset, that restricts movement.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, absolutely, and, yeah.
Yeah, so what you really do is you release a corset effect. An analogous thing is the so-called military posture, where you really arch your back, mm-hmm. and that restricts movement of especially the ribs and the lower back. Military posture is not good for breathing.
Right, and it's probably just as bad as slumping for breathing.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it is, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing that we speculated, and I just intuitively, you know, this just has to be true, if you're freeing these muscles to work from lower tensions and you're freeing these muscles from the tension so that they're longer and therefore more effective, and you're then... It just seems intuitively obvious that you must have enhanced coordination of the whole musculoskeletal system involved in breathing. There's one really interesting neurophysiology paper that was published, oh, I believe it was around 25 years ago, which showed that in the neck, the receptors, the little nerve endings that are receptors for position of the neck muscles, those are extraordinarily dense. It's as if the neck was designed to record extraordinarily sensitively, you know, exactly where the muscles of the neck and the bones of the neck are positioned.
Mm-hmm.
And because the Alexander technique, of course, is very strongly involved with trying to have free use of the neck, our idea is that may well be a mechanism to increase length of the neck, improve balance and flexibility in the neck, that this will help coordination as well.
Mm-hmm.
So those are speculations. I mean, these are real results. So it's a selection of controlled, healthy, young and middle-aged adults.
Right. And just to amplify a little bit what you said about the neck, that for our listeners who may not be that familiar with the Alexander technique, as you said, Alexander technique teachers tend to put a lot of attention on the state of their students' necks. And if you think about it, just at most elementary biomechanical level, you've got this head which weighs 10 to 12 pounds poised up at the top of your spine. It's a big part of your total body weight. And how you manage that, its relationship with the spine itself, is pretty crucial for balance and coordination throughout your whole body. So it's certainly,
Absolutely right.
it's not posturally, and certainly it would stand to reason that it would affect your breathing coordination as well.
I
So
think that's
from an Al I guess
absolutely
from an
right.
Alexander teacher's point of view, it's not terribly surprising, but it's wonderful to have the actual experiments carried out to verify that.
I agree.
What would you say in terms of the implications of that study? As my first thought is, it might not be as crucial for someone who had a normal fairly normal breathing pattern to start with, although it would certainly be helpful. But I could imagine, and I'm just guessing here, that someone whose breathing was a bit compromised, it might suggest that taking some Alexander lessons would be a pretty good idea. How would you say that, or do you have a different take on that?
Well, I'm of course a physician, so the obvious thought is that people with difficulties of breathing could be helped by this, by lessons in the technique. And what those of us who are in the respiratory disease research community need to do are studies on patients with the various respiratory diseases, whether it be asthma or bronchitis or emphysema or the various diseases that involve scarring in the lungs and the decreased lung volume. All of these are studies that need to be done. And I'm, in truth, I'm hoping, now that I'm semi-retired, I'm hoping to be able to initiate some of those, but hasn't happened yet. It's going to take a lot. It's going to take a lot of work, and I would love to welcome anybody out there who wanted to be involved in such a in such projects.
So, as things currently stand, though, it sounds as though someone whose breathing is compromised for one reason or another, that taking some lessons in the Alexander technique might be certainly worth a try. And
Oh, absolutely.
I would also imagine that someone for whom breathing, good quality breathing, is particularly important, so obviously athletes, but also singers, anyone where breathing is more important, good breathing, let's say, is more crucial than the average person would do well to investigate the Alexander technique. And you had mentioned that your own back pain was alleviated with lessons. And I should mention here that there is has been about 2 years ago a major study on back pain and the Alexander technique conducted in the UK, sponsored by the National Health Service, published in British Medical Journal, and actually which showed pretty conclusively that the Alexander technique was an incredibly cost-effective way of helping people with back pain. And indeed, that study has spawned at least two follow-up studies that reinforced the original. So, I guess
Yeah, I
I
mean,
yeah, go ahead.
of course, as a physician, there I have to say there are people who have bad disc disease and who need surgery for it. But the kind of pain I had was the absolutely common pain where it's, your low back hurts to variable degrees, And what you don't have any clue is that you're doing it to yourself. And I remember thinking, no doctor's going to be able to help me with this.
Right.
And well, in a way, I was right. It was the Alexander technique that helped
Right.
me, because I learned to sit.
Right. Right.
And I do a lot of sitting all day long. I have a desk job. That's a very important study.
And I think we should really make it clear here that the Alexander technique is not a therapy. It's a teaching process. And as you say, there are certainly going to be conditions that the Alexander technique is not going to be able to help. But on the other hand, quite often people with back pain or in we don't know because we don't have a large scale study, but certainly people with breathing issues might very well be helped based on your study.
One thing that I think
Yeah.
is an implication of our study is that it's well known that as people age, that the total volume of air in their chest decreases, and the total volume of air, the kind of tests we did that they can move out in and out quickly, decreases. And what would be very interesting to do, and it would be a very long-term study, would be to follow people over, say, 20 years, comparing a control group and an Alexander lessons group. And to me, it's intuitively clear that Alexander lessons can apply to good posture, good use of your respiratory muscles, good use of your neck, that it will enhance one's breathing, whether you have disease or not, well into elderly years.
And it's a little off topic, but it would one of the dangers of aging is balance issues, falling, that sort
Oh,
of thing.
yes.
And the Alexander technique can be very effective in basically improving your coordination and your ability, certainly, to balance your head on top of your spine, which in turn has pretty big implications for overall balance.
Absolutely
So,
true. Absolutely correct.
I'm wondering how you, a professor of radiology, happened to find the Alexander technique.
Well, that's a very nice question, and I'm happy telling you. I am a physician, but I almost became a musician. I played the violin and the viola, and I was, this is now, goodness, help, 30 years ago, a little over 30 years ago. I was having a problem with my playing in which I was getting tendonitis in the right shoulder, and I was having trouble just moving the bow. I was getting stuck drawing a full length of bow in the violin and viola, and my teacher said, "Oh, you should try the Alexander technique," because he had had lessons. And I said, "What's that?" Thinking that was some musical technique, and he explained it. And he recommended that I go to his teacher. He went to lessons for lessons in Alexander technique to a teacher. That teacher, Andrew Perloff-Sabell, who became my co-author, and I approached my lessons in a super scientific kind of way. Just, you got to prove this funny thing is going to work. And in my third or fourth lesson, I realized that there was just deep truth in this technique. And I said, "Oh my God, I have to do a study." So we did it.
That's, it's interesting. I had a conversation with Dr. Paul Little, who was the lead investigator of the UK back pain study we just talked about, and he too had been a oh, and he told me he had come very close to becoming a professional musician
Is that right? I
before,
didn't know that.
yeah, before deciding to go to med school. So that's it's interesting that although I don't think in his case, I don't think that was the connection that got him into the study. But in any event, it's interesting there are those parallels in your backgrounds.
That is a nice parallel, and I'm happy to say that my tendonitis went away with, very gradually over within a year. And tendonitis maybe had nothing to do with the Alexander lessons. But at the time, I felt absolutely clear that I was learning how to let go of a shoulder that I had been absolutely unnecessarily scrunching.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you would like to talk about?
Gosh, nice question. You know, I think we've covered it very well.
Okay, well, my guest today has been Dr. John Austin, who's a professor emeritus of radiology at Columbia School of Medicine, also director of thoracic, I guess director, had been for many years, director of thoracic imaging at Columbia University Medical Center. And we've been talking today about the Alexander technique and breathing and other related topics to do with the Alexander technique. Dr. Austin, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.